SMQBs, this is episode 168. Milk, who are you sitting down at the bar with?
The head coach.
There's only one answer. There's only one answer I expect from you out of this.
Interesting. I feel like I'm going to fail you. I'm doing the head coach of this team behind me, the Florida Gators. Kevin O'Sullivan. Who are you wanting me to put on there?
Well, there was a pitcher from that game that I'm hoping somebody's bringing to a bar.
Well, I take it back.
Pitcher.
Oh, wow. A certain pitcher.
Maybe the coach is a better pick. Let's just leave it there. Go ahead and go with the coach.
No, Nace, tell us his last name.
No, I'm not getting into that. Baseball fans will know it, but that's okay.
I'll go with the manager of the Florida Gators in their ninth College World Series appearance. Only 34 wins. Hell of a turnaround by Kevin O'Sullivan. Interesting stat. Nine straight super regional wins. Nine straight. That's amazing. Go Gators for the College World Series. We'll preview it in a little bit.
House, what about you?
I'm going with another champion. I think he can drink in Europe, but Carlos Alcaraz, the champion of the French Open. You guys know from prior pods, I'm not Mr. wanting to watch tennis. This guy makes me want to watch tennis. He makes me want to turn on the television and watch tennis. He is so fun. He's so engaging with the fans. He's so kind to everyone around the court, the ball boys, the ball girls. He's a great, great champion. And by the way, not if, because when he won the Australian Open, he's got like, I think two or three chances to win an Australian and get a career Grand Slam earlier than anyone ever.
Interesting.
So we are seeing some greatness upon us in the tennis.
And you world. Like him because he didn't win in too few games.
That's true, too. I also made a bet off of him.
Who are you bringing, Pope?
I am going to bring one, J.J. Redick.
New head coach of Lakers?
Well, no. Not yet. I would love to know what he's thinking once Hurley, and we'll talk about it later, Hurley turned down a very lucrative offer from the Lakers to leave Connecticut and go coach the franchise. JJ is probably their target. They hadn't confirmed that, but you know, there certainly was a lot of smoke before Hurley's name came out. One of my favorite things on Twitter today was a picture of JJ with the question mark of how does it feel to potentially coach or be the boss of your co-podcast guy? Because he and LeBron have a podcast together, and potentially JJ would be coaching LeBron.
I wouldn't put it past Dan Hurley that he put all this out there and the Lakers were never talking to him in the first place.
Well, I think that probably would have been ferreted out that it was smoke and no fire. I mean, I believe that it was a tough decision. I think Coach K had 20 years ago, Coach K had the same circumstances, you know, with NIL and everything else. I thought there was actually a chance. I thought it was less than 50-50 that Hurley would go to the Lakers.
All right.
There was definitely a chance. And I'd love to hear what J.J. Redick is thinking now. He's got lots of successful podcasts. Does he really, you know, never
Pope,
having coached
this,
anybody?
This is the 32nd. We're sitting down at a bar. Who are you bringing?
Fine.
You're bringing J.J. Redick.
I had three drinks. I just had three drinks with him. I'm
done. With Redick.
That's it. Thank you.
Redick is wasted at this point.
Redick is hammered.
I'm bringing Steven Strasburg because he needs a damn hug. The poor guy moved out of D.C. It's really sad. It's a sad story because he just feels like a total failure. And it's really, I don't know. I think it's very sad. So I'm bringing Strasburg. Read the Washington Post article on him, but he needs a hug, a beer and a hug. All right,
thanks,
guys.
Thanks for depressing us. Jeez.
Yeah, let's jump into it. House, a U.S. women's basketball team has rarely made so much news for who's not on it. What is going on?
All of us started watching a lot more women's basketball than we ever did before. I know we would watch it from time to time and see some, you know, highlights and good players, but we became regular watchers, particularly in the postseason of college women's basketball last year because of one Caitlin Clark. There have been great players before, Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi and a whole bunch of others that we could name that have made headlines. We knew their names, but we didn't follow their career. We didn't turn on the TV set as must-see TV. Caitlin Clark has set all kinds of records. She has already grown the sport by leaps and bounds. She set records for most watched games during the NCAA tournament. Recently, she had a game for the Indiana Fever against the Washington Mystics, in which they had to move the stadium where the game would be played to accommodate the number of people that would come watch the game, which were more people that came to watch that game in the Fever versus Mystics than in the NBA Finals game. There was like 20,000 for the Mystics and 19,700 or whatever, which was capacity. I'm not saying they didn't sell out in the NBA Finals game, but the point is, Caitlin Clark puts butts in the seats. And by the way, the Fever and Mystics are both terrible teams. They're both going to finish at the bottom of the league. So they're all going to see one person. And we know what that translates to over time. It translates to money for all of these players.
By the way, House, just to follow up on one thing you said, you know, the Mystics have actually moved a second game this year to Capital One Arena. And it's not a Caitlin Clark game.
Oh, that's interesting.
So this phenomenon of women's basketball, like you're saying, I want to let you keep going, but it's not just Caitlin Clark too, right? I mean, that's how powerful she is that they've actually played they're playing a second game.
Brittany Griner?
It's against the Mercury.
Yeah, but I think I saw some stat where the attendance differences in her games and others is pretty. I mean, I agree with you, Nace. It's growing, but.
Well, it's just showing that there's an interest, right? I mean, the other stadium is pretty small, but it may not sell out for that game, but certainly they'll sell more than 5,000 or 6,000 tickets, whatever the other facility holds.
Yeah.
So in women's basketball internationally, no one has caught up to the U.S. game, whereas in the men's game, there's now the very real threat. I don't think this year, but you never know. It's not a foregone conclusion anymore that the USA men's will win a gold medal. They absolutely have competition. The USA women have no competition yet. So for many reasons, it's not very likely that many people watching the Paris Olympics are going to turn on the television and watch USA women's basketball. You already know the outcome. Unless maybe you put the women's version of Steph Curry on the floor and you watch Caitlin Clark on an international stage. One big problem. USA women's basketball, it has leaked who their team is going to be. They haven't finally and formally announced it, but their 12-player roster does not include Caitlin Clark. We will not be the first pod to announce that this is one of the dumber organizational decisions in the history of sports. But for me, this is as dumb as it gets. And there have been so many good things that have been said about it. Pardon the interruption, those guys with Wilbon and Kornheiser and Stephen A. and Colin Coward. There have been a whole bunch of really, really good discussions about this. And you could argue, I suppose, that it comes down to marketing and growing the game. You could argue, perhaps, that she's not one of the best 12 players in U.S. basketball. You could argue that she's only been playing the professional game for a few months. You could argue that she's been playing for 10 straight months and needs a break this summer from all of it. All of those would be stupid. Because at the end of the day, come on, what are we talking about? Are we not trying to grow sports and be an ambassador for the sport elsewhere? Are we not trying? Listen, for me in women's sports, still the number one thing forever in growing any women's sport was Brandi Chastain taking off her jersey, having the sports bra on. I had kids that were playing soccer. I had nephews and stuff like that. there were not a lot of girls coming to the soccer field on weekends before the Brandi Chastain moment. Now it is completely equal. Women's soccer, girls soccer, in many ways has reached equal points of popularity. And everyone says that the women's U.S. women's team is for years now a better team than the U.S. men's team. So why are we not giving women's basketball the chance for a Brandi Chastain moment to put Caitlin Clark on the floor? And by the way, yes, I know someone's going to get a short straw. I get it. I get that someone's going to get a short straw if they're left off the team and she's put on the team. But everyone also agrees that the USA is going to be dominating these games and winning by 20, 30 points. So put Caitlin Clark, even if she's the 12th best player on the team, put her on the bench, give the people in the stands the anticipation she's going to hit the floor, and then put her on the floor when you're blowing them out. Rebecca Lobo.
Didn't you send around the picture from the Dream Team, the original one with Christian Laettner, like hiding in the background?
I sent that around. Yeah.
Because
there was no way Pope was going to send around Christian Laettner.
Well, he shouldn't have been on the team.
Well, he shouldn't have been.
Right.
He shouldn't have been.
So we've done that before.
There is a woman named Chelsea Gray, who is a point guard, who has not played yet this year in the WNBA because of a leg injury.
Oh.
Supposedly, if there's an injury replacement, it is likely to be Caitlin Clark for Chelsea Gray. Also, apparently there's two alternates that will be named. You can rest be assured that Caitlin Clark will at least be a named alternate. The real question is, will she be on the floor and will they overcome this stupid decision that's been made?
But what do you do to Caitlin Clark too now? Like, so let's say she gets to be an alternate or she gets to fill the spot by Chelsea Gray doesn't fill. Doesn't it look like there was whining? And by the way, she's been great. She hasn't whined at all. She's come out and said all the right things when asked about it. But that's unfair to her, right? You left her off the team, and now when there's an opening, you're going to slide her in there. That's embarrassing for everyone, and it doesn't help her out. I have a question. How much of this is the powers that be in women's basketball trying to appease this kind of backlash that I don't, you know, we talked a little bit about it with her getting body slammed and stuff like that. How much of that is to appease the people who've been playing in the WNBA who just have straight up jealousy for her celebrity status? Is that part of what's going on here?
I think so. And I think that's also stupid times 100. Like, I get it. No one's above the game. Until somebody like, I don't know, Steph Curry or Magic Johnson or Larry Bird, you know, again, listen to the Wilbon and Kornheiser discussion about Bird and Magic Johnson, and also how there's very much a racial component involved in everything that's going on with Caitlin Clark. And Wilbon hits it straight on. And I don't need to copycat exactly what was said in that discussion, but we cannot put that elephant in the corner as it relates to Caitlin Clark. There is also a racial component going on out of all of this. And she's going to have to play her way through it, like they said. And she will be a superstar. She will be on future Olympics. But there's an opportunity right now. And it's an incredible missed opportunity that they're screwing up.
Have they mentioned why they did this? Have there been any?
Yeah. The reason is that it's a 3-year process assembling this team, that it just wasn't picked this past weekend or the weekend before. There's been multiple training camps. This team has gelled together. They've learned Cheryl Swoop's, style of play. They've had 4 different total trainings together, and she's not been in any of them. Again,
a
stupid.
Whole four?
Yeah,
a
stupid.
Whole four?
Wow. She's way behind.
How many players on the team have been at all 4 or started there 3 years ago that are going to be on the team? I don't know the answer to that. I'd love to know, though.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Hey, Rooster.
How's it going? Yeah. Sorry, I'm
Welcome.
Late.
Good.
So did you guys discuss, do you think that there's somebody on the team currently who's a veteran who's not as good as Caitlin Clark?
Not directly on that we discussed. Is she one of the top 12 players in women's basketball in America? You know, the consensus is that as it stands right now, you could make a good argument that given everything they've learned about playing the style of international basketball, et cetera, maybe she's not in the top 12. My answer is who cares? So what?
Right. I think I agree with your point there. As long as you concede that she may not be a contributor on the court yet because of lack of experience on the international
then
level.
She shouldn't be out there. But there to win?
But I think House's point, and I agree with this, is unlike the situation where the men's team picked Christian Laettner, the men's team didn't need to grow the sport at that time. They were already popular sport.
They had chosen to pick one college player.
Right, but they didn't need to. WNBA needs this juice that they get from Caitlin Clark every single day, it seems like. No matter what happens, there's a new Caitlin Clark story. The WNBA needs that publicity. They need what she brings to it.
They don't like the Olympic team.
That's true, but women's basketball has come leaps and bounds in just a year.
Well, you know what? Right. It'll be interesting to see what the ratings are for women's hoops now in the Olympics. I mean, will they be bonkers or will they be mediocre?
Without her, there'll be nothing.
Mediocre at best.
Well, we're going to find out, right? I mean,
I'm not saying that she's Tiger Woods. We won't know what she is yet for a while. But I doubt you could find a single golfer, whether they liked Tiger or not, who was upset about how much he dominated the marketing of golf. He put money in their pockets. He changed purses. He's changed the game. She has the opportunity to do that. The ad revenue alone that could come from her, you know, it trickles down to everybody. It's just a dumb decision. I'm done. An early punching WNBA.
The
WNBA messed this whole thing up years ago. It wasn't just recently. It was they never really, you know, back when Val Ackerman was the commissioner of the WNBA, they never really marketed their superstars like Cheryl Swoops and Cynthia Cooper and Lisa Leslie properly. They just marketed women's basketball. They didn't market the concept of a superstar. And now you have a black commissioner has this new superstar come in, this white woman from Iowa, and they market the shit out of her. And it's almost like there's no other members of that draft class coming in. It's all Caitlin Clark, Caitlin Clark, Caitlin Clark. And I think they did create a fair amount of resentment there, you know, sort of unintentionally. And Caitlin Clark had nothing to do with it, but I think the black players resent her because she got that gigantic Nike contract. She's standing on the shoulders of so many who came before her, none of whom got any of that treatment. And it's just a sticky situation.
I mean, it is a sticky situation, but this is not the first time in history that timing has mattered, right? I mean, there have been people who were excellent athletes in their sports, women's sports, men's sports. Look, we just added the Negro League stats to the Major League Baseball stats. Some of those guys would have gone down in history as the best players, the best pitcher in the history of the game. But I'm not saying it's okay, but timing matters. And we are at a point, for whatever reason, where Caitlin Clark caught the attention of the country and spread the game. Why that didn't happen, you know, with Ionescu, there were times where people watched those UConn teams, you know, and couldn't wait to see a UConn game. But even then it fell a little flat. So, you know, timing does matter, and it is unfair to Caitlin, but here we are, right?
Who are we blaming though? Because House, you said the WNBA. I mean, who is the selection committee?
You're right. It's not the WNBA. It is the
USA Basketball.
Women's Basketball, which is different than the WNBA. Yeah.
And it's interesting because you kind of, like, if you drill into that, it's South Carolina coach, former U.S. coach Dawn Staley, LSU assistant Simone Augustus, Old Dominion coach Delisha Milton Jones, Connecticut Sun president Jennifer Rosati, and the WNBA head of league operations Bethany Donovan. That's it. That is the group that decided the roster. So it's interesting. It's a lot of college coaches that are, and a former U.S. coach that's involved in the decision making as well.
Yeah, well, it is interesting.
It's an interesting story. I mean, it is an interesting story, and
it's going to keep going. Through Paris, it'll be a headlining story.
I think she's going to end up playing in the end. Gold? Oh boy,
what's that?
If they did win the gold,
don't win the gold medal
without Caitlin. Yeah.
If I were Caitlin Clark right now, I would want nothing to do with that team. Because if she gets on the team,
Lightning,
it's going to look like sour grapes somehow, like somebody pulled strings and all that, and it's going to ramp up. And if she's on the team and they don't win the gold, oh, my God. If I'm her, I would stay. I got four more years. It'll happen. I would not want to touch that team with a 10-foot pole right now.
Right.
I think the best thing they
especially
can do
to ride the bench.
The best thing they can do is name her as the top alternate now. Therefore, if somebody is truly injured, then it is a legitimate
promotion. What's going to happen.
So she doesn't go to Paris. She just stays home as an alternate?
Yeah.
Well, maybe she goes to Paris as a tourist.
Did you want to go with her, Milk?
Why not?
Very romantic, Milk. It's a very romantic city. All right.
Is she going to be there or what?
Milk and Caitlin on the scent.
Milkland.
Tower over me.
Milkland?
Good talk, guys, about the importance of women's sports. Way to fucking drag it through the mud at the end. That way. Well done, guys.
Our listeners expect nothing less.
Let's get out of this before it even goes worse. Pope, it's your time to shine. It's the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. I heard a rumor you played it. What do we got to look for?
Oh, I brought that bitch to its knees.
Oh my God.
No, there we go. Continuing out. I brought that bitch to its knees.
No, I cannot say that I tamed.
Bad time to mention our sponsor.
Number two. It was
what's that everything. Pat McAfee just joined the podcast, apparently. So
Pinehurst number two is an iconic course that is to say it's difficult is way underestimating. It is one of the more difficult courses on the rotation for the U.S. Open. The first time they had it there, I think they had the highest one day, total to par back in 1999. As we can all remember, that was the famous Payne Stewart sank the 18-foot putt to prevent going to a playoff with Phil. And Phil was actually, had the plane on hold as they're waiting for the birth of his first kid. And Payne Stewart goes up and said, there's nothing better than having a kid. And we all thought a lot of Payne Stewart. And then of course he was killed in the, that tragic plane crash later that fall. So Pinehurst, that was their first U.S. Open after being a course for many years. The next U.S. Open was 2005. I was there. Michael Campbell won his only tournament he ever won. It was really a weird tournament. Tiger was the prohibitive favorite and somehow on Sunday blew it. 2014, they were back. And
by the way, that's not a sentence you say very often, right? Tiger somehow blew it on Sunday.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of times where that was the case.
Certainly not back in 2005. I mean, it was presumed that he would close. And then in 2014, Martin Keimer was just a shot making was ridiculous and he kind of ran away with it. So back at the U.S. Open, Donald Ross, famous course. What makes it so interesting are the mounds. The greens are like turtlebacks. So you your short game better be impeccable, be able to get up and down, keep the ball on the green. They're going to be rolling fast and firm. Scottie Scheffler, coming off another win. To Bison's point, I guess, making golf boring for some. But he held off Morikawa in Jack's tournament on Sunday. He's the first golfer since Tom Watson in 1980 to win five times on the tour before the U.S. Open.
When did I say Scottie Scheffler made golf boring?
You've said that before. Absolutely.
I don't think so.
I know I did. I know I did.
I don't know.
Until he ripped somebody's pants. So
maybe,
he was pouring shit.
Maybe everybody but Bison then. But that has been discussed on here that it is that he makes it boring because he's dominating so much. The odds are he's plus 320, which is ridiculous for one person to win a tournament that was such a large field and so many talented golfers. That's lower than his odds were at Augusta when he was it was more of a favorite. So you've got Morikawa, you've got Shoffley, you've got, is Rory going to make an appearance?
None.
He's gone 10 years without a major, according to Milk. No, probably not.
No.
And interesting stories. You got Liv. They have 13 golfers. Bryson DeChambeau, had a pretty good PGA. Koepka doesn't appear, right now, like his head's in the game. We'll see what happens at the U.S. Open. Do the Liv guys make a charge? And what about Wyndham Clark? You don't hear a lot about him right now. He's a defending champion. Is he going to be a factor? So, I think sometimes at U.S. Opens, the course is the story. I think Pinehurst number two this week, the course will be the story. I don't think it'll be much more than two or three under par at the end of the day. I think it's going to be a pretty brutal test.
Well, if Scheffler has one weakness, I think we all agree it's the putting.
Yep.
If that is considered his weakness. So how does that affect with the short game that you got to have on to win this?
Well,
could that factor in?
It could. His short game, though, he's best in the world right now in so many different things, but his short game is really good. His up and down rate is ridiculous. So, the putting, if you miss a putt at Pinehurst and you put too much pace on it, you will putt it off of the green.
And well, that was you.
Down.
That was
might have done that a few times.
Right.
Short of the green in two, down in seven. I might have had a couple.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, so Scotty's putter really kind of let him down a little bit yesterday. But he shot a two over. And he made a really tough 5 foot downhill, had a little break in it. If he had missed it with pace, he might have had a pretty long putt coming back up the hill. But he made it, and you could see he was really excited. A lot of double fist pumps for Scotty, which is unusual. So who knew that was a big putt, and I just think he's playing with such confidence right now. He's got to be the prohibitive favorite.
Pope, if you were putting together a team of, say, 10 players sort of splattered from, you could pick one guy in the top five and one in the next five, and after that, no, tell me, give us two or three people.
Why are you asking me? I think you should ask House.
I won't tell you. I know who's going to win. It's no one that has been mentioned so far, and because I am the third best golf handicapper in the world right now, based on the PGA championship from a few weeks ago, I can't reveal it. It's worth one.
I know who you're thinking of.
So
I haven't mentioned Victor Hovland, but he's not been playing that well, but for a good PGA performance. So
but for the good performance at the major.
Yeah, but he shot at what, 78 or so this weekend to take himself out of contention. I don't know. I mean, House, you can tell us now. It doesn't matter. We'll see it in a couple days.
Give us two or three players that'll be fun to watch. How about that?
I mean, I think you could enjoy watching the ball striking of Colin Morikawa. I think he'd be a very intriguing golfer to watch this weekend. I'm not saying you should bet on him. And I might be leading you the wrong way. By the way, the Europeans.
House, nobody takes our betting advice.
Yeah, no kidding. Cousin, I forgot to pull up cousin Justin's email. Maybe you have it.
I don't know. Suffice it to say, nobody takes our betting advice.
Is he going bankrupt on
it? See if I could get it.
Generally speaking, I would caution you on the Brits. the short game, some of them have a pretty decent short game, but the whole kind of, as Pope said with the crown greens, it's not something you can run up a ball here. You run it up and it runs over. So this
or
is
comes back down.
It's you got to have a great short game. It's just not exactly target golf either. It's not like when it lands on the green. The best thing that could happen for Pinehurst, and I don't know if you mentioned this, I don't hear you mention this about the weather forecast. The best thing that could happen for Pinehurst is no rain. Because
right.
if these greens get no rain, good night, Gracie. You won't be able to hold them at all. And then it's anyone's game. It could be a lot of fun.
The player has I have a question. In my opinion, is Tagala.
Oh, yeah.
We always Tagala's like him. Yeah.
Wait, I have a player that I'm intrigued by that I want to see what's going to happen. Actually, two. And as much as I hate these live traders, I am sort of curious about Bryson. But what about one John Rahm, who really not that long ago was the number one player in the world?
Nah.
What?
Boy, he is balling.
He's in the toilet.
He's in the toilet. It's in between his ears.
Well, yeah. I mean, that decision to go to live really fucked him up, didn't it?
Apparently.
Listen, if you guys make money on Tony Finau, you can thank me later. Okay, that's it.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, I had Finau down as a wild card, too.
Oh, now he says it. Now he says it.
I'm very concerned about Rory in this tournament. I feel like he's got
that he might do
win.
Well.
And this divorce has me shaken up, man. Tony.
Yeah, I mean, you got to see.
He might be in a better place.
You got to watch the pregame of Amanda Baliones on Thursday morning. If she looks happy Thursday morning, put money on Rory.
Oh God.
Oh my God. Why are we doing this, guys?
I'm just saying. It's just.
Well, fortunately, Amanda won't be there. CBS does not have the rights to the U.S. Open, so there will be no.
She'll be there.
But she may be there inside the ropes.
Oh, yes, she will. That's why you might win, and that's really annoying to me. So we'll see.
Just for the record, this is not actually Bison on this podcast tonight. This is an AI-generated audio recording of him. Okay,
it's
anything
not
else
Bison,
on this open?
Christopher T. Yes,
zip it. I'm editing that out. All right, anything else on the open? No. Pope, what did you shoot the last time you played Pinehurst?
The one and only time I played was during my wedding week. I had a buddy. Buddy took me there. I got married in Raleigh, and I don't have a comment. It was definitely a triple figure.
Look it up. What I scored there.
Yeah.
What did you, you played their house? Didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
How'd you look it up?
Did anybody shoot? Else play there?
What did you shoot, House? Come on.
I'm gonna look it up. I'm gonna look it up and post it in the comments. I'm not just gonna make it up. I'm gonna look it up.
Do you think that you broke 100?
I do. I do think I did. Well, listen, I wasn't playing from the tips. I wasn't playing from the tips.
Sorry.
All right.
In the front. All right. Mustn't have been any doors. Hey, let's. Rooster. Rooster. What's going on in the NBA Finals?
I'll tell you what's going on. Kyrie and Jason Tatum suck. But the thing is, the Celtics have four other guys who can shoot on the court, and they can withstand that. When Kyrie is sucking, it's just you just have Luka on the Mavs because the other guys have disappeared, and the Celtics are just too balanced.
Tatum was one rebound away from a triple double last night.
That was a very inefficient one rebound away from a triple double. He was 6 for 22 shooting. He lost the ball at least four or five times trying to go to the hoop when there was no way he was going to get to the hoop. And when he got to the hoop, he was bricking layups. He was terrible. But he played hard. He played good defense against Luka, and he rebounded well. He definitely rebounded well.
Some of those drives where he went in, it looked like he was trying to tomahawk, and it was like when we used to play like Nerf basketball in the basement or something, and he came up about eight feet short. Yeah,
that was what he was doing.
I'm like, what is he doing?
He's also getting mauled, and wasn't getting any calls.
Oh well,
you know,
there were a lot of people on the pod who called for Mavs in six. I'm just wondering how likely is that right now, down 2-0? What has to happen?
I'll tell you how unlikely it is.
I don't understand. Tell me the math.
Here's the math. It's 13%. Probably less than that for six.
I was going to say, I'm surprised that high.
Teams that have won the first two games of an NBA Finals are 31-5.
Woof.
The last time that a team that lost the first two games NBA Finals won was at Milwaukee with Giannis in 2021, and they won four in a row, but that's when Giannis went nuts. He averaged like 37 points, I don't know, 12 rebounds. He had 50 points in game six to close it out in Milwaukee. That's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. I've seen this story.
The Celtics were up 2-1 on the Heat. And
yeah,
they blew it. This team can blow it.
They could blow a couple games. I just don't think. Look, these guys are 78-20, including the playoffs. They're 14-2 this year. They are not going to lose four out of five games to this Dallas Mavericks team.
It's not a series until
a home team loses.
That's yeah, right. Well, right. So that would only result in what, a game seven loss, and then it's a series. Look, the fat lady's warming up. The Germans are about to bomb Pearl Harbor. This thing is done. It's over.
Oh wow! what a change of a week.
Spirit.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Wait a minute. Was that somebody else who went on the Words with Wallace podcast and made all these guarantees?
He went from
Wallace.
I always said they had to get a split. They had to get a split in Boston. They didn't get a split. They're down 0-2, and they have no chance.
So I have a question. What has anybody heard an update today on Porzingis and his health?
No, I've heard he's playing.
He's fine. Play.
He'll play.
He's fine.
They don't even need. They need him at like 60 or 70%, and that's still very effective against the Mavs.
Wow, I don't know about that.
Is the MVP right now?
Who?
Who is
Drew Holiday?
Drew Holiday, absolutely.
Yep.
That he's
think right now
X-factor.
Jalen Brown might get it.
The glue that is holding this team together.
I think a lot of commentators would say Drew Holiday has an edge right now, especially after what 26 points last night.
Before the Mavs became good at defense at the end of the year, they were known for blowing teams out with their offense, and the Celts have held them to 89 and 98 points.
Yep.
Or it's Drew Holiday on Luka wears them down.
Just want to tell our listeners that until Rooster brought Jalen Brown to the bar a couple weeks ago on this podcast, he was not playing at this level. So I think the Celtics
whatever
fan,
you said to
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever
you said at the bar to Jalen Brown was pretty important.
But I also said that the keys to the series were going to be Drew Holiday and Porzingis.
Well, so you don't have to look too far to know why the Mavs are getting fleeced, because their free throws are 25 for 49.
Oh, yep.
Ooh. And Boston is 32 of 39. I mean,
yeah, last
Dallas
night
lost
had, at one
by
point
7
equal
points.
Attempts. Yeah, it was a 7-point swing last night in free throws.
Yep.
Same attempts, same number of attempts, and I think the game was 7 points at the time, or it was like 8 or 9 maybe.
Well, it was a 7-point
that's
game.
Awful.
That's what it was, a 7-point game.
You know, the thing that's got to worry the Mavs is that the Celtics were 10 for 39 from 3-point land
and
still won the game.
That's what I mean, Rooster, I watched that game. It seemed like every time the Celtics shot the ball, they missed, unless they hit like three threes in 9 seconds, right? I mean, they had these like little spurts where they drained them, and then
Pritchard,
the rest of the time.
Halftime,
yeah.
You know, buzzer beater. Pritchard, that three was momentum-wise.
Well, also, Drew Holiday caught, assisted on lots of layups and was cutting to the hoop for layups.
Man, his
you can't hit threes, you have to start, you know, making the easy shots.
His three point form is ugly, Drew Holiday. I'm just wondering, even he's surprised
when it goes in. He like jumps up and down.
God.
He's so happy.
So the Mavs, though, they have the greatest backcourt in the history of the NBA. Why is this happening, right?
They
don't have Kyrie
shots and scored 16 points. He's just
and maybe be annoying them.
Not Kyrie
anointing them the greatest backcourt was a little premature, perhaps, after one good series.
Well, look, he was 13 for 37 in Boston and 0 for 8 from 3. He's now 0 for his last 12 games against Boston. Clearly, something is potentially in his head with what's going on when he plays Boston, whether it's home or away.
Bye.
It comes down to game three. If they win game three and they win it convincingly, like put some doubt in the, and then they get game four at home. I mean, you know, it's best two out of three. Boston still has a huge advantage. Luka could always steal a game five. He's done that before, but I think that's like, you know, dumb and dumber. You're saying there's a chance. Yeah, there's a chance, but everything says that the Celtics are going to close this out in five.
And game three is going to be played July 1st, right?
I mean, I'm going Friday night, sweep. And I damn sure hope I'm not trying to avoid the sweep because that would suck.
That's what I want to clarify. Since you've already announced on this pod that it's done, it's over for the Mavs, you're going to still, no matter what, you're going to stick by those guys and be there Friday night, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
All right. You can bring them back. You can bring them back.
By the way, I don't think Luka is without blame here.
No question.
He's scoring okay, but there, if you contrast their offense with the Celtics' offense, the Celtics are whipping the ball around the horn and just missing open shots.
Yes.
What happens with the Mavs is Luka walks the ball up the court, dribbles around, and if he doesn't get his shot because Jrue Holiday's closed him down or is being doubled, he's whipping a pass to a guy who has like 3 seconds to shoot before the.
We call that Luka hero ball, and that was not a formula for success before the trade deadline. And so, you know, we're back to that formula right now. And, you know, unless they do something to change that in game three, I mean, game three, they could lose very easily. Same type as game two. Boston could give them all the opportunity and Dallas could fail to close. They need somebody else to step up. Where PJ Washington has played okay, but he still missed some big threes. I mean,
well, there's a lot of basketball left, but right now it just looks like the Celtics are the better team.
They are. I mean, it's hard to say that they're not.
Yeah. We got another finals going on. The Stanley Cup finals being played too. Milk, you're the hockey guy. You're a Florida hockey fan.
Yeah,
Florida is the center of the universe in hockey, apparently. Just give us a quick update on that, so that if a tree falls in the woods, somebody hears it here.
Florida is going to take home another Stanley Cup. I said it last Monday. None of you agreed with me. They're exactly who I thought they were.
We're blinded really good. Something
you were, although House wasn't on and never did make a prediction, but I'm pretty sure he was going to take Edmonton.
Oh,
really, really good defense. Shut Bob. Down, huh?
They've got Bob. What about Bob?
They shut down Edmonton's power play in the first game, three for three on that, which is Edmonton has relied on heavily this season. Playoff Bob. Shutout and looked absolutely amazing. And by the way, Edmonton played pretty well. Like they had 33 shots on goal, and
they dominated the puck. They just couldn't score on Bob.
I mean, look, the good news here is for Lord Stanley is that he spends so much time in Florida, he officially no longer is paying income tax at this point, right? I mean, it's ridiculous.
By the way, I said last Monday, watch for the coaches. I thought Edmonton didn't really adjust in the third. They had a bunch of shots on goal in the first and second and only 7 in the third period. Knobloch has got to coach better and he's got to adjust better. And they just, Florida, three different guys.
Knobloch What happened with that?
The Twins.
He plays in hockey now, man. You didn't know
good
that?
Good slap hitter. Really good slap hitter.
He bounces the puck three feet short of the net.
Edmonton's too top heavy. Okay. And if McDavid and Hyman and Dreisel don't carry this team, nothing happens. They didn't play that better. They got to get other guys involved. I sent Panthers in six last Monday. I still think that.
Game two is when?
Tonight.
Game two. Farthest series between two Stanley Cup teams ever. Brutal, brutal travel schedule.
Yeah, you're right. All right, Mil, keep talking to us. Let's move over to College World Series.
This has been, have you guys, honestly, if our listeners have not been tuning in for the Super Regionals, the Regionals, this is really, really fun. There's a lot of talent. Unfortunately for you Big Ten guys, this is going to be an all ACC, SEC, no matter what. Georgia is they have 7 of 8. Georgia, NC State play tonight. Whenever that goes, right now we have UNC, UVA, and FSU from the ACC. Gators, massive game yesterday in extra innings. I'm shocked they swept Clemson. A&M, UK, Tennessee. I think Georgia's going to win. I think we're going to have 5 SEC teams. Ton of talent. Tune in. This is really good baseball. It's not just college guys. Huge MLB prospects. I think 6 out of the top 20 MLB prospects are playing in the College World Series. 11 out of the top 50. If Georgia wins, arguably the best number one prospect, they have him 1 or 2, depending on Charlie Condon, who's their outfielder, third baseman, best hitter, best batting average in NCAA baseball. Of course, the Gators have Jack Caglione, who's just a massive home run hitter and a really good pitcher too. That's what I love about college. These guys still are great in the outfield, great hitters, and are still on the mound pitching. And honestly, if you've been watching this and you've been tuning in, college sports are down right now. Football, the NIL, all of this bullshit. This is a pure college sport. Tune into it. It's like still college athletes. A lot of these guys were drafted out of high school. They chose to go to college. There's no money in these sports. It's all going to the football program and all of that. These guys aren't getting paid a ton to go to these schools. It's really, really fun. Tune in. Starts Friday, I think, right?
Yeah.
Milk, I got a question. The game last night between Florida and Clemson was just, it was unbelievable. It was just awesome. A ton of fun. It was awesome. There was a home run in the 10th?
Of the 13th.
Clemson up one. The 13th.
Yeah.
All right. So home run, guy flips the bat, runs around the bases. Next thing you know, the coaches are out screaming at umpires. Two coaches get thrown out. What happened? Do we have any idea what happened?
I don't know. I know, honestly, I think a couple of the players' moms ran onto the field at one point.
It looked like it, right? I was waiting for the orange slices to come out next at one point.
Oh, man.
I don't know what happened, but I think the player flipped his bat but didn't get ejected, right? I don't know.
Instead, two coaches got ejected.
Get ejected. And by the way, they weren't going to be able to coach like the first two games of the College World Series if they had made it. So it was interesting.
I thought that was very strange.
If you haven't seen the catch the center fielder from Clemson made, look it up. It was Willie Mays Hayes style. Unfortunately, they couldn't get it done though. That's too bad.
Hey, House, don't we have a potential correspondent College World Series next week?
Josh Milrod is going to be in Omaha. He's on his way there. I think today or tomorrow, we are going to have a correspondent from Omaha.
Yeah,
nice.
Him and Craig Kelly are going to be there together and partying. Hopefully one of them gives us a correspondent report.
I will expect to hear from Josh then.
I want to see live updates from the Jell-O Shot Bar.
Yeah.
I expect videos at the Jell-O Shot Bar, and I want somebody counting.
By the way, my pick is Tennessee to win this thing. Tennessee is unbelievable.
They struggled against Evanston.
Aren't they the number one team?
Yeah, they're the number one team. They blew them out in that third game. They literally, I'm not kidding around, I looked at the top 100 prospects. I'm pretty sure like 6 of their starting 9 are top 100 prospects, like their entire infield. And So I've got them to win this thing. We'll see.
A name to watch for might be a household name someday. Vance Honeycutt, outfielder from North Carolina. He had like four or five walk-off home runs during the regional and super regionals. Just ridiculous, fun guy to watch.
He's top. I think he's top 20.
He's like three or four from what I've seen.
I think he's like 20th, but he's up there. Good. I'm telling you, great, great baseball. Like good.
The cool thing about college baseball is they will be able to reach into college football and turn them into pros. They will be able to reach into college basketball and turn them into pros. They won't be able to do that with college baseball. College baseball will remain college baseball. There's too many players. There's too many teams. There's too much that you have to develop as a player. And college baseball is just a great sport to watch or play, as one of our comrades knows. The greatest catcher in Georgetown baseball history, I think.
Georgetown,
yeah.
Hey, there was some great catching play yesterday.
Yeah, there was. There sure was. So. All right. Anything else on College World Series?
That's it.
Negative. Who's got a punch? Don't call it a comeback.
I do.
Oh, good. I thought we were going to miss that.
Do you guys care at all about soccer? I know most of you don't. This was a national embarrassment to our country. What happened? And Mr. Nace had to watch it live in person. Greg Berhalter should not be coaching the American team, the U.S. men's national team. We have, for the first time in U.S. men's national history, we have a full starting 11, all of whom are good enough to be playing overseas in one of the European teams. We are playing in Serie A and Italy. We're playing all over the Premier League. These are legit players. We should be able to keep up on a field. Colombia fielded a pretty good team, but this should have been like maybe a draw. We're at home and we lost 5-1. That was an embarrassment. Berhalter had a lot of criticism for how he was using players, how he selected players earlier. I don't like him. Very few people in the soccer world like him. And I know it's just a friendly, and I know there's a long way between now and 2026, but we cannot embarrass ourselves as the host nation. And that's got to be fixed. Greg Berhalter and U.S. men's national soccer, as long as he's your coach, you're getting a punch from this guy.
Oof. Yeah, it was something to not see. Anybody else got a punch?
Barbecue sauce.
All right. How about a lasso? I'm going to jump into my lasso because I'm going to carry on from what House just said with his punch. And my lasso is actually to the Colombian fans because I was at that game and holy shit, I got to tell you, that was impressive. It felt like home being at FedEx Field and having the visiting team occupy 80% of the seats. that was very well on brand for that stadium. But it was a sight, and you all know that I can't get into soccer too much. I don't know, but man, this was inspiring, and those fans were up and cheering and having the best time and all over the place. I'm going to give them a lasso because I was just so impressed by the commitment and the level of excitement. And Lord knows they had a lot to cheer for. So good work, Colombian fans. And I did talk to one of the security guards at the stadium and said, will you help me recruit some of these people to come back for Commanders games? Because there was more energy in that stadium during that game than I've seen in at least 10 years at that park. So,
House, was this a friendly?
This is a friendly.
So we have what? Copa America, though, coming up.
Copa America and the Euros are both being played at the same time the next couple weeks. We're going to be having a lot of really good soccer on coming up.
Are we going to have the same roster for Copa America?
Pretty much.
Well,
yeah, there's a lot to figure out in the next couple weeks.
All right. Any other lassos? Let's do some buzzer beaters.
All right, I've got one. Did you guys talk about Dan Hurley before I got on?
well, ish, but go ahead.
A little bit.
Turning down $70 million from the Lakers to three-peat for UConn. It's I think it was a smart move. I really think it was a great move by him, not just because I'm a UConn fan, but I can't imagine him coaching the Lakers as currently constituted. He's a lot like you know, like the Knicks head coach. He runs really hard practices. He's right, you know, he's up their asses. He's a hard-nosed coach. I can't imagine LeBron and AD tolerating that. And it would have just been a disaster. I think he's holding out for the Knicks job in a few years when Tibbs steps down and, or, you know, when his contract they were about to renew expires. But $70 million offered to a college coach, and he turns it down from the Lakers. What does that tell you about the Lakers these days and where they are as a
Well, I'll tell you
franchise.
One thing that's interesting about it, we did start to touch on it earlier, was he's going to start getting a little taste of what it's like to coach players who are making money, right? I mean, that's going to, over the next couple of years, his roster is going to be full of guys who are making lots and lots of money at UConn. So it'll be curious to see if he keeps the team together like he has been able to, running those hard practices when guys are saying, I can transfer to Duke and make $3 million a year, you know, just as easily as being here and not have to put up with this shit. So
well,
he's going to have to adjust a little
can
bit.
Can you win
right?
a championship at Duke anymore? That's the question.
Well, that's a good question, but do
Hopefully
these kids
not.
Care? Yeah. it's just going to be interesting to see what happens, but it might be a good warm-up for him to go into the NBA.
Not a bad thing for recruiting either to say, I turned down the Lakers to coach you.
Yeah, it's true.
It's
Hope, what do you got?
What? I guess what I didn't know if we were going to talk about it at some point, so I'll bring it up as my buzzer beater is the race yesterday, F1. Mm. I mean that was fun. Even though Max won, he didn't win without stress. I watched it but did not follow it as closely and did not have the sound on. I know you guys were based on your text. What was it that cost Norris the race? Was it the safety car and bad pit strategy?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even bad pit strategy. It's just like when he was caught with when he was on the track and other cars able to come in relative to when the safety car came out. It was kind of like what happened in Miami where Max was kind of stuck and Max benefited from his timing of when he got in the pit and Lando didn't and left him behind.
It was an interesting strategy call though, because they left Lando out one lap longer.
That's what they said today.
Yeah, well, that you know, it was interesting because you had. So I'm trying to remember. That might have been even at a different point in the race, because you had Verstappen, Russell, Lando, boom, 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 and then those two went into the pits, and Lando kept going around. It looked like all three were going to come in. So that must have been a different part of the race. There was some interesting calls, but at the end of the day, it was just bad luck. I mean, just like Max lost Miami from bad timing of the safety
and
car.
Lando was the recipient of that.
Good right. Yeah, that's so right.
He wasn't too upset about it.
What does yesterday say about the Ferraris? Any issues or that would be a one-off?
It's just crazy how cars can be so good one week and the next be so bad.
It a horrible weekend.
Yeah, but I, you know, I was thinking a lot about this because if I'm Lewis, I don't know what's going through his head. That decision to put Leclerc on the hard tires when everybody else was on inners was really strange. It was a really strange, I mean, he was literally losing about 45 seconds a lap, if not more, for three laps. And finally, he just had to give up and go in and put the inners on. I mean, they really shit the bed with that decision. And it just seems like it just seems this way because it's Ferrari. But man, it seems like they get their strategy wrong all the time. It just seems like that team cannot get out of its own way.
Right.
Yeah.
And Red Bull re-signed Checo. And what has he shown for it?
Nothing. Nothing. You know, they get a 1-1. They have him for a year, and then they get the right of first refusal to bring him in for the following year. Something's gonna have to change a lot. Otherwise, it's just going to be one more of Checo, and they'll go into 26 and the new changes to the car without him, because, boy, he is racing poorly right now. Really poorly.
If you want to see one of
the better overtakes of the whole year, see Alex Albon's overtake in yesterday's race when he pulled off two cars right successively and kind of swerved in between them. You can really, when these guys race hard and they're making some kind of really last second dangerous maneuvers, you can see just the skill that's involved. That was the best overtake of the year.
It was fun racing yesterday. I think it was the most fun race of the year. Just up and down, you know, not just middle of the pack, but like for second, third, fourth. I mean, there was some really fun stuff that happened.
So yeah, Mercedes on Mercedes violence for the podium.
This is awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. House, you got a buzzer beater?
I just want to give a shout out. Some of these leagues make a lot of mistakes. MLB, we've talked about this before, how well they do the Field of Dreams game. What they did for this past weekend with the Phillies and the Mets and the way they marketed it and the way they handled it and the experience. And there are some Phillies fans that I know that were over there for it. It was really, really well done. I don't know what the ratings will be like over here in the States, but it was incredibly popular over there. And, you know, Chase Utley has made it his kind of his whole design to be the ambassador for baseball to England and grow the game over there. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but for one weekend, they showed pretty good. Obviously, I would have loved for the Phillies to have won them both, but it was good for the league that they split. There was a ton of fans from New York and Philly. The game showed really, really well in West Ham Stadium, and good on major leagues to do this in the strategic way that they're doing it rather than the scattershot way that the NFL is going to like every stadium all over the world.
All right. Good one, guys. Anybody got anything else? All right. Well, let's see. Well, next time we talk, it'll be, we'll have been 4-0 Celts, or will we be 2-2? And the Mavs back
in. I think we'll be 3-1.
It might be over at that point anyway. All right, guys.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.